Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person.
It's a symbol.
An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth, not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
The word phobia, as defined by the Healthline website, a phobia is an irrational fear of something that's unlikely to cause harm. The word itself comes from a Greek word, phobos, which means fear or horror. Hydrophobia, for example, literally translates to fear of water. When someone has a phobia, they experience intense fear of a certain object or situation. Phobias are different than regular fears because they cause significant distress, possibly interfering with life at home, work, or school. People with phobias actively avoid the phobic subject or situation, or endure it with intense fear or anxiety. Phobias are a type of anxiety disorder. Anxiety disorders are very common. They're estimated to affect more than 30% of U.S. adults at some time in their lives. And there are lots of phobias out there. Acrophobia, the fear of heights. Arachnophobia, the fear of spiders. Astrophobia is the fear of thunder and lightning. Autophobia is the fear of being alone. Hemophobia, the fear of blood. Ophidiophobia is the fear of snakes. And if you have a fear of animals in general, you have zoophobia. So many to choose from out there. There are some more unusual ones as well. Electrophobia is the fear of chickens. I think chickens can be scary. I mean, there are some evil chickens out there. If you have pagonophobia, you've got a fear of beards. Nephophobia, you've got a fear of clouds. I guess you can be afraid of almost anything, anywhere, for a number of various reasons. And that's a lot of what we're talking about today. I've got Dr. Hector Garcia. He's an evolutionary psychologist. He's going to join me for a later segment in the broadcast. We'll take a few calls on the subject. We're going to start here by taking just a few calls with our listeners now. I've got Susanna. Susanna, are you with me?
I sure am.
We're talking irrational fears. Give me yours, please.
Oh, well, I had the worst fear of pumping gas, believe it or not.
What's so scary about pumping your own gas?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. I was programmed to fear it by my mother, I guess. She was a nervous driver, and there were so many things that terrified her about driving, and that was one of them. So I just heard from the time I was a kid, you know, how scary it was and how nervous it made her, and I grew up the same way. I'd go to any length to avoid a gas station where I had to pump my own gas.
Like, walk me through it. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, open any old wounds, but what's the worst that can happen? If you're out there, you grab the nozzle, you
right?
start to,
like,
I mean, what?
I know. It wasn't even, it was based on nothing, you know, even bordering on reality. Like, I wasn't afraid of explosions or anything like that. It was, I guess, a fear of the unknown. No one taught me how to do it. I thought I would look like a fool. Really, it was just completely irrational. Ran out of gas. I would almost run out of gas so many times just trying to find a gas station where someone was, you know, was a full serve gas station. It was ridiculous.
Oh, there's a trip back in time. The old full service gas station. Did you and I just give away our ages? I mean, did we just...
I'm afraid we did.
Back in the day when you'd pull in and they would come up and say, leaded or unleaded, and then they'd clean your windows.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, those were the days.
Those were the days.
I've got a couple of things. Like, first of all, I've always been a little weird about the static electricity thing. You know, if there's a spark that comes off your finger,
I've heard
about that. And the other fear that I've had, it's not a fear, but I've always been terrified of embarrassment if it ever happened, and that's why I triple check, is the people who drive off and they've forgotten to take the nozzle out of the trunk, and so they rip the hose off. And I know they have those safety mechanisms that just cause it to pop off. But, I mean, you'll see the YouTube videos. Somebody puts gas in, they hop back in the car, and they just drive away. I've always been a little bit weird about that kind of thing. So, how do you get around? Do you have people? Do you bicycle?
I had people. I did have people. I used to get my brother, actually, to take my car out and fill it up, you know, going back a while.
That's awesome.
No, when I say it's ridiculous, like, it's ridiculous. The lengths I would go to avoid, you know, pumping gas. And eventually, as the full-serve stations, you know, disappeared more and more, I just had to suck it up and keep doing it and eventually got it figured out and... I still get a little twinge every time.
Hey, you overcame
my car, though.
You faced.
I did.
Your
I did,
fear.
Yeah.
Let me ask you just an unrelated question. Well, maybe it's semi-related question. When you pull up to a full-service pump and it says, "Please see attendant," do you just keep driving to a different convenience store because you don't want to have to go in and pay cash? Does anyone else do that?
I do. If I can't pay with my bank card at the pump. Yeah. I'm out of there.
Bye. Like, life's too short. Yep. I don't want to have to talk to people. You know what I'm saying?
Right?
I want my gas. Susanna, you are awesome. I'm glad you overcame.
Thank you.
You give us all inspiration.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
Thanks for being a part of the conversation.
Right. Good talking to you.
I have a thing about thumbs. Like, I'm not squeamish at all. I could watch, in fact, I have. I'm fascinated by surgery videos from opening incision to closing stitch. I'm all in, no problem. But you prick somebody's thumb to draw blood, and I am on the ceiling. I just can't. Even now talking about it, I find my body recoiling. Thumbs. Anybody have a body part that kind of eyes or something that if anyone manipulates it or accosts it in some way, you just shrink in upon yourself? Does anyone else do that? I had some people submit their irrational fears on Facebook. Debbie said she gets freaked out when she's touched by a fish. I guess swimming in a lake or in the ocean, and a fish grazes against her. Ryan said walking up a staircase in the dark freaks him out. And I'm not sure I blame him, especially if you, you know, have done the haunted house thing. Laura said her son's fear, he's afraid of hand cream. Actually, any cream that is not clear, sunscreen, some shampoos, he simply won't use it, he won't come close to it, and he walks out of the room if somebody puts it on. He fears the hand cream. Frank said he has an irrational fear of dead bodies. He gets panic attacks at funerals. Janet said she's afraid of paper cuts. She said she got a huge adrenaline rush and anxiety just typing those words onto the Facebook comment threads. And knowing what we know about paper cuts and how horrible they are, I just don't blame you. April said dead insects, like live ones, I can deal with more or less, but if I accidentally crunch a dead one under shoe. Luann said she's afraid of choking. She has to push pills down her throat to swallow them, which is ironic since that can actually make you choke. Renee said she's afraid of the Grand Canyon. I've never been, but it looks like a good place to fall to your death. No way I would go near it. Chris on the switchboard. Are you with me, Chris?
Yeah, I'm with you, Seth. I'm a longtime fan, first-time caller. I think I got a weird one for you here.
Oh, weird Halloween or irrational fear?
Not so much Halloween, but...
Okay.
Yeah, this is kind of along the lines of the nails on the chalkboard feeling that you get when you hear nails on a chalkboard or something like that. But for me, it's an irrational fear of snagging a thread on clothing or like a washcloth on something and then having that screechy, dry fabric sound happen. Just thinking about it makes me cringe. Like I had one time I was wiping down my walls with a washcloth and I had one of the little loops of terry cloth snag on a little finishing nail. And it just made a noise and a feeling that just still makes me want to just shatter and implode and throw up to this day when I think about it.
You know, the one I hate is where a thread gets snagged on like a snag in your fingernail. You got like a little crease or something. And
it gets.
I mean, I'm not trying to traumatize you, but I'm just saying.
No, and it's always your brand new shoe too, right?
To talk about this is really a step. I think that's bravery. You've demonstrated real courage as you talk about the snagging threads.
I don't know. Hopefully somebody can identify with me here because it really does provoke a feeling within me.
All right. Well, that's a great addition to the show, and I appreciate you sharing it. Take care of yourself, Chris, okay?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Have a good one.
Take care. Yeah, don't you hate that when the thread gets caught right in the, you've got like a clipped or cut fingernail and it just gets right in that crease and then it snags. And so it's pulling on the cloth and it's pulling on your nail. And I don't mean to freak Chris out, but I kind of freaked myself out at the same time. I've got Nathan on the switchboard. Hi, Nathan. We're talking about irrational fears.
Since I was a child, I've had an irrational fear that if somebody sticks their finger in my belly button, that it will untie and my guts will just pour out and I'll die. And I don't know where it came from. And it's to the point where, like, you know, after 2 or 3 months of dating somebody, you start to get into those deep, dark fears and whatever. And inevitably, somebody tries to stick their finger in my belly button. And yeah.
Somebody tries to stick their finger in your belly. This happened a lot.
I've probably had 3 girlfriends in the last 10 years just joking around try to do it.
Oh, I get it. They know it's a button, pardon the expression, and they're just pushing it.
Yeah.
So you worry that your entrails would then become your extrails if someone reaches in there. Yeah. That's a great one. I've never heard anything like it in my life, but now I find myself with sympathy pains. I'm holding my belly button. Nathan, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
Have a great day.
All right, see you later. Man, you don't want somebody grabbing your belly button and pulling out your innards. That's no good. K.E. says, anytime I'm driving near a tractor trailer hauling cars, I'm afraid one of the cars will come loose and crash down on top of me. I think that's a common fear. Pamela said, as a kid, I was terrified of toilets flushing and overflowing. I've never mentioned it or even told stories about it to my 6-year-old daughter. Strangely, she is terrified of toilets, too. Brian, thank you so much for calling the show.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Andrews. Thanks
Please.
For taking my call. This is a fear of... demons that a lady came in when I was working for a religious group about 25, 30 years ago, and we'd record the pastor and have his tapes available that people could buy them. And this lady came in and was so outraged that there was a demon on her tape. And this growling demon was absolutely livid. We played it, we heard it, and it was behind the pastor's voice. You could hear him, but you could also hear this growl. And it was absolutely blood-curdling. I mean, I get chills just telling you about it right now. I mean, it's spooky. Anyway, she stomped out of there, and she said, "You're all a bunch of devils, and you're both Satan." And so I took, being the audio engineer and the technical person there at that time, I took the tape back into the tape room, and we recorded tapes at 16 times sound speed on the cassette. What in the heck would this be? I wound up doubling the speed on the tape, and I almost picked up what it was going on. I tripled it and then quadrupled it, so now it's 8 times sound speed. But behind the audio of the pastor, I could hear, "Breaker, breaker, Charlie, there's a pokey bear down the street there. Just make sure you watch out."
So
and
it was
I go, what?
It was a CB radio then.
It was CB radio, but how's it getting into our machine? Someone didn't reattach the ground wire to the head of the master tape deck panel, and it was picking up, acting like an antenna, picking up the CD radio and recording it on the tape that was going 16 times sound speed. And so when you played it back, it sounded like some guttural monster was on there. Talk about audio paranoia.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I like about your story, though, is that you went in and reverse engineered it. You said, "I'm going to get to the bottom of this." You did some experimentation and discovered what the source was instead of just assuming it was a demon. I like that about you.
Oh, true, yeah. Well, and too, the pastor did a lot of exorcisms also, so that even would have helped in the, probably the idea of it, but...
Your pastor did exorcisms in church?
Oh, of course, of course. He believed that people had demons in them, and they needed to be rid of those, and so that helped to help the lady embellish the idea that she was listening to a demon coming from a pastor that actually exorcised demons. See, he was an ex-hypnotist. So this was the idea that probably helped promulgate it. So as a foundation of human understanding, I don't know if you ever heard of it, but the pastor died a couple months ago. But the end result is that that type of thing that's out there is what encourages people then to think the supernatural is real.
Either we don't know the explanation or we can disprove whatever the supernatural explanation was, but there's no proof that it was supernatural. I'd be curious if you were to go and show that lady who ran out of the room what you had discovered, if she would have received what you had to say, or if she would have never been convinced it was anything but a demon, right? She's already got that emotional connection to the idea.
No idea who she was or how to get in touch with her, but that's for sure.
Well, that's
all right, sir. Keep up the good work.
All right.
Enjoy your program.
Thanks for calling, Brian.
All your education you provide for us.
You're very kind. Thank you, Brian. Thanks for calling. We'll take care.
No, you're welcome.
All right. See you. Something about noise on tape is inherently scary. There was a film out with Michael Keaton called White Noise. Not a great movie, but the phenomenon of playing these tapes as we used to do, listening for hidden sounds. You would listen for patterns, you would listen for whispers, often ghosts, demons, the other world, the dead, those types of things. There's something about, you know, the static, the imperfections of tape beyond digital that make that particular phenomenon, I think, extra scary. I don't know what your thoughts are on it. Tammy said she's afraid of frogs. She's just terrified of them. They're all slimy and they can jump right at you. You know, frogs, they're just, isn't there a horror film called Frogs? Shireen said balloons being popped freak her out, and I concur. You know, when you're in there preparing for a birthday party, or some sort of festivity, and they say, hey, can you help fill up these balloons? And so you grab the balloon and you go to the helium tank, knowing that at any second, boom, cannot stand it. Or if someone takes their hands and they rub it along the mylar of the balloon or the rubber of the balloon or whatever the material happens to be, that sound of the hand waiting for a fingernail to catch it. Boom. That's a totally, that is not an irrational fear. That's rational fear if I've ever heard it. Laura, thank you so much for waiting on me. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Laura. We're talking fears. What do you have?
Actually, this is funny. Last, you know, in the spirit of Halloween, you know how all the horror movies start being showed. And my favorite Poltergeist came on last night. And I realized while watching it that three of my biggest phobia or fears have came from that movie. Because I remember being five, and it was a double feature. We had saw Annie, the movie, and we saw Poltergeist. And so last night I was sitting there telling my mom, I can't believe like you, I saw this so young, but I that's what got me to be scared of clowns. That's also what got me scared of my closet. And also it got me scared of a big tree that looked like the tree that took the little boy Tommy. And those fears were literally with me forever. Like even watching it last night, I was going, I remember loving clowns, and I had a cute little clown that had a little strawberry shortcake dress on it or something. Saw that movie, and my mom would watch how I would put it away, you know, like put it in the closet, and that made me scared of the closet because I thought about the closet there. But, wow, horror movies could really mess a kid up.
No kidding. Well, I think those are legit. I mean, clowns, I think, are inherently scary. The big shaped tree out the window looming over the child. I totally buy that. And the dark closet. That's something many of us can relate to. So
the one scene I always forget that just got me is when he's looking at the clown and then he looks up and it's gone, like from the chair. And I just, my heart dropped just like it did when I saw it when I was little. I mean, I watch it every year, but that part always gets me.
I think the part where he's looking under the bed. Anything looking under the bed to see something, and then there's nothing there, and then you've got to pull your head back up to look around the room, and that's usually when the jump happens. Totally legitimate, Laura, and a great addition to the show. Thanks for sharing it.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. See you later. Ever seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space? It's an actual film, by the way. It's not scary. It's very 80s, but it's kind of a classic. I don't know. Andrew, thanks for calling. We're talking about irrational fears. What do you have?
So this is kind of a weird one. So there is something about the sound when you unfold really awful quality napkins that just makes my teeth tingle. I can't explain it.
Okay, wait, hang on. Let me make sure I'm understanding. A poor quality napkin, meaning bad cloth or cheap paper, unraveling or being unfolded.
Yep, something about the sound. You can hear it like scraping against the other pieces of it when you unfold it. It is something, it just sets me off. I am just a paper towel guy. I can't use napkins.
Well, that's good information to have. Next time we invite you over for family get-together, don't use the cheap-ass napkins. Make sure you use paper towels or really, really, really primo cloth. That's good stuff.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, Seth.
Napkins. Bad napkins. Cheap napkins. Freak people out. Aaron, thanks for calling the broadcast. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hi, we're talking about fears and phobias and the stuff that wigs us out. What do you have for the broadcast?
Yeah, so a few very quick things, two that are kind of rooted in my upbringing as a pastor's kid. My dad is a minister and still was. I'm a person of color, and I grew up in gospel services with huge choirs and preachers screaming everywhere. So when I think about this now, this is horrifying, but when I was about 5 years old, four or five, this is one of my earliest memories, sadly, one of the big gospel choirs with about 60 people did this crucifixion service, and literally the guy was up there My mother later told me that the man had fasted, the man who was playing Jesus, had actually fasted for like 2 weeks to prepare for this role. So he looked emaciated, skinny, scrawny. He was sweating. He was up on the cross and he was crying. And there were tears coming around his eyes and the choir was going with this haunting, dramatic music. I was so terrified, I couldn't move. I was sitting with my mom and I had nightmares for weeks after that.
I can imagine how traumatizing, especially for a child.
It was. And when I told her about this years later, because I didn't really know how to process it at the time. So I told her about this when I was probably a teenager. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm not surprised you were scared. That was a very intense crucifixion service. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, that's quite a bit disturbing, I think.
So do you carry any of those sort of the hints of that into your adult life when you see a crucifixion depiction, you know, an Easter-type passion play? Does it kind of hit you where you were when you were a kid?
Oh, thank goodness. No. I'm way past that. I'm so... And actually, Seth, your show is the first show that I watched when I was finding my way out of Christianity about 5 years ago now. Yours was the first thing that I listened to. And so, you know, you were a big help in leading me to that path. And now I watch Mr. Atheist. I love Matt Dillahunty. I watch a lot of different things. So yeah, I really do appreciate that. But no, I've really gotten over that. And part of it too is that my parents, although they're very religious, they didn't really push us too much. And so they made sure that we weren't traumatized at all. So
sure,
yeah,
I buy that. I buy that. Well, thanks for the kind words. It means so much. You know, if I wanted this show to accomplish anything, it would be to try to make a difference, encourage people in their own journeys. And if it was there for you, that just makes my day. So thank you for that very much.
Yeah.
All right, Aaron, you take care.
And I have one more short
go
one.
Ahead. Go
Can
ahead.
I give you one more little short one?
Yeah.
And this one's really weird, and I have this fear now. So when I get out of the car, like, you know how I live in a big city, so there's a lot of parallel parking. So when I get out of the car and I swing my feet around, I have this fear that a car is going to drive by and crash and decapitate my legs at the ankle. And so I quickly get out and I shut the door. This is while I'm sitting in my theater, like facing the street, and the same when I'm getting in. So whenever I get in the car facing the street, I quickly pull my legs around as fast as possible so they don't get cut off. I don't know where this came from. I've never heard of this happening. I don't even know if it's possible. But I have this weird fear.
Well, I mean, that's probably some common sense in there. If you got traffic who's potentially coming your way and you worry about becoming a double amputee because you're parked on the road, I think that's just a survival mechanism. I wouldn't punish myself too much for that one, Aaron. But thanks for sharing it on the show, and I hope you have a happy holiday, okay?
All right. Thank you, Seth. You have one, too.
All right. See you. When I say happy holiday, it almost sounds like Christmas, but Halloween is the holiday. Christmas is a distant second, at least for some of us. I've got Charlie on the switchboard. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. We're talking about the things that freak us out.
I actually am terrified of pigs. Everybody laughs at me when I say that. When I was a little girl, I went to go visit my grandmother's farm, and she had pigs. And my dad was like, oh, let's go look at the kids' pigs, because I was kind of interested. And he put me on top of the rail that was actually enclosing them. And it was a very small stall with a bunch of pigs in it. And I started walking on the top of the fence and fell in. And I almost got trampled. And then, to make matters worse, my mom, who was in the kitchen, obviously looked out the window and started screaming, my baby, and ran out there, dragged me by the hair of my head out from underneath the fence and was patting me all over. The whole combination of everything has left me like, I can't stand to hear the squeal of a pig. I can't stand to look at pigs. To the point that, like, even as an adult, we went to one of those petting farms, and I didn't know there was a pig behind me, and the pig came up, I guess, wanting the bottle of milk I was feeding the deer, and squealed, and I jumped on top of the bench that I was on and just started screaming. So it's like this serious, irrational fear.
Well, it's understandable, given the trauma that you would endured as a child. You know, you fell into the pig pen and they were, you know, there was swine aplenty all around. I kind of get that. I wish for you a pig-free future, okay?
Okay.
All right. See you later. Anybody remember, like, if pigs were going to be scary, remember, were they pig or boar? Or what was it in the film Hannibal? Right? When Mason Verger was up there and he had planned Hannibal's death, Hannibal Lecter's death, and he had all these ravenous pigs, these flesh-eating pigs that he had sort of conditioned to eat people. You ever see the movie Hannibal? It's one of those movies that everybody says they hate, but I actually loved, and I can't defend it because it's not a great film. Let's do some more of these, but we'll do so with a mental health professional. This isn't like actual, you know, professional advice, but a perspective from an evolutionary psychologist. Dr. Hector Garcia is going to join me for round two as we continue to talk about the things that freak us out. We continue next.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Halloween approaches. We're talking about the things that make us go, right? Things that give us goosebumps, hairs on the backs of our necks, make us run out of the room because we just can't stand it. Usually irrational fears. And I want to bring in Dr. Hector Garcia. He's an evolutionary psychologist. I guess I'll start with a question about fear. Like, are there different types of fear?
I'm not sure there are different types or styles of fear, but I do think fear is just such an important conversation to have about, because it's such a far-reaching emotion. It infuses our politics, it forms the basis of our religions, our psychiatric disorders. But what I find interesting is that it's ultimately a survival, an emotion that facilitates our survival. It facilitates fight or flight responses. And it has very deep roots in predator avoidance. But the fun part is that it can be fun. You know, it forms the basis of this holiday that we find so entertaining.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the difference between one person that says, oh, this is a blast. You know, let's ride the roller coaster. Let's go into the haunted forest attraction. Let's go to the haunted house. Let's get the crap scared out of us. What's the difference between that person and somebody else who says, oh, hell no, there's no way I'm going in the door?
I see what you're saying. I think there are probably personality differences that, you know, maybe predict how people respond to different kinds of stimuli. You know, some people are thrill seeking and some people try to avoid that kind of experience. You know, there's a theory called, you know, cognitive arousal theory, where we all want to achieve a homeostasis, right? Like an ultimate level of, like a ideal level of cognitive arousal. And some of us are set low, so we're always seeking to get more stimulation. Those are the thrill seekers. Those are the people who tend to be, you know, more on the ADHD spectrum, you know, and that is why, ironically, stimulants work with people with ADHD, because it brings them up to an optimal level. Whereas people who are more introverts, librarian types, they're set high and they're trying to reduce that level of stimulation. So I think probably personality differences predict a lot of that. But I think we're still talking the same emotion, though. It's the same brain structure. It's the same set of, you know, hormones that gets released into the bloodstream.
Is it true that, like, I get the same rush from a good cup of coffee that somebody else might need to, I don't know, to base jump to get? Does that make sense? Like, to get that dopamine rush or the endorphin rush or whatever kind of rush it is. There are some people that simply need more. They really got to push themselves into a dangerous spectrum to get that pleasure response, correct?
People who feel chronically understimulated, you know. But I'm curious what kind of coffee gives you the thrill of a base jump. Wow, that is some primo coffee.
Yeah, well, it's called Death Wish Coffee, and it's
Death Wish Coffee.
There's actually I believe it's called Death Wish Coffee. There's another one called Shock Coffee. You deal a lot with PTSD sufferers in your line of work. Can we talk about the types of trauma, types of people who are responding to fears and aversions and in their life every day?
Types of traumas? Well, there's all kinds of types of traumas, you know, war-related trauma, sexual trauma, child abuse, assaults. I mean, you can develop PTSD to a wide variety of traumatic experiences.
And dealing with that is what? Cognitive behavioral therapy type stuff?
There are treatments that have stood the test of time. They work. I like to always give a plug to those by name because they are so effective. Prolonged exposure therapy and cognitive processing therapy.
Explain those. You know, go into detail for me on each one of those, if you would.
What PTSD really is, Seth, is it's an ancient survival response that gets turned on. You know, and a lot of these symptoms are really adaptations that were designed to help us survive dangerous environments of our ancestral world. You know, so for example, being hypervigilant, looking around, watching your surroundings, looking for danger, getting angry very easily. You know, you need that in a dangerous environment. Not sleeping, you know. So in a dangerous environment, such as those of our ancestral past, nighttime was filled with dangers. So, you know, it kind of benefits somebody to sleep with one eye open in those kinds of circumstances. But today, when PTSD is kind of like a survival response that doesn't turn off when it's supposed to. So the best treatments that we have are designed to facilitate that adaptation back to peacetime suburbia. So different means. One of them is prolonged exposure therapy. You have the person go over their traumatic memories over and over and over until that adrenal response doesn't kick in anymore. And go to public places over and over and over until their nervous system habituates. Cognitive processing therapy is one that looks at distortions in our thinking that arise from having experienced a trauma. So predicting negative events, predicting dangerous events, you know, reading negative intentions, nefarious intentions to other people. So correcting thought patterns that have kind of developed as a result of a trauma. So, but basically it's all about recalibrating these ancient fear responses that turn on and don't turn off when they're supposed to.
This is an evolutionary phenomenon. What kept me safe on the African savanna today may be, would you call it an irrational fear?
Not back then.
Yeah. But it's a holdover from the day when, I don't know, the venomous serpent, or I didn't know if it was venomous or not, but being afraid helped to keep me alive, right? It's that type one and type two error that people make.
Yeah. And it's the same brain structures that we artificially stimulate at Halloween time. You know, it's these ancient threat detection modules of the brain that we tend to stimulate for fun around the holidays.
Do you align that with the roller coaster model? Everyone in their brain, the logical mind knows they're safe, even as the emotional mind is losing its mind. Is that a good way to say that, Hector?
Well, sure. I mean, so it's a thrill, you know. Dopamine, it's a chemical that drives the reward system of the brain. And it's very similar to chemically to adrenaline. And there are dopamine receptors in our adrenal cortex. So is it a thrill? Yeah, like you said, you know, that's why people do cocaine or and drink coffee. You know, it having adrenaline feels good. If we can get that charge of adrenaline from the safety of our couch or the movie theater of the or on our block during Halloween, even better. We get that charge of adrenaline free from any actual danger.
206. Hi, thanks for waiting. What's your name?
This is Charity.
Thanks for calling, Charity. You're on with Dr. Hector Garcia. You have a comment or question?
Yeah. Actually, the past couple of years, I've been trying to face my fears of scary movies. And I feel ridiculous because I'm 40 years old, and I can't watch scary movies without waking up in the middle of the night just terrified. And just trying to face that, I guess, by slowly watching kind of classic films, classic scary films. I watched Halloween for the first time the other night, and I was laughing most of the time, but then I wake up at 5 a.m. and I'm afraid.
Well, let me jump in here real fast. Hang on. Like, watching scary movies is not necessarily like a life necessary thing to do. So my first question is, it's almost like if you taste a food that is not good to you, like you taste something bitter, I would just say, don't eat that food. What drives you to want to enjoy the horror movie?
Well, I guess it's because I have so many friends that are really into it, and I have to miss out. I've literally been in a room full of people watching a scary movie with my back turned away. It was The Descent, I think that was the movie.
That's a scary one. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I could hear and see their reactions and hear the movie, and I was like, why am I doing this?
You want to engage more socially with people over a common interest, and that's why you want to get over this hump.
I just want to understand why there's such a thrill making yourself afraid. Like, I was speaking to my therapist actually about it, and he said, well, it's not natural for us to seek that. It wasn't something we always did, but now we have that, you know, luxury to do that, I guess, to make ourselves scared, because used to it just happened in, you know, naturally. Running from, you know, dinosaurs, or not dinosaurs, but bears and stuff like that, you know.
Well, I guess it depends on the dinosaur. I don't know. Dr. Garcia, you want to speak to any of this?
Dopamine, adrenaline, that feels good, you know. And maybe some people, like Seth was mentioning earlier, maybe some people require more of that than others. They kind of seek that stimulation because they're understimulated. The people who skydive or bungee jump or race motorcycles, you know, things like that. Maybe they're wired to, they need more of that. And some people need less of that, just kind of where they fall on the natural curve. Maybe watching these movies, you can do your own kind of exposure therapy.
Do you feel like she's seeking the dopamine rush of acceptance with her friends? I mean, I'm not trying to be a psychologist, but I mean, there's a pleasure response with feeling like you belong and you can connect on that level.
No question. Yeah. You want to be part of it.
I have so I live in the Orlando area, and everybody goes to Halloween Horror Nights, which is a huge thing at Universal Studios. It's a huge thing year after year, and all my friends go, and they're really, really trying to get me to go this year. So one of the things I'm trying to do is build up some sort of tolerance so I can go enjoy myself and have fun and not be terrified the whole time.
I'd like to hear how that story comes out. Like, if you go, I just want a debriefing. I want to be debriefed if you go through the universe. Because, you know, if anybody can pull off a haunted house, it's going to be Universal Studios. I don't know. I saw Hector. Did you have something else to add real fast?
No, I was just thinking of this idea of doing, you know, kind of an exposure therapy to movies. You know, watch a horror flick a day until Halloween, see how that inures you to this fear. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
I think it's an interesting experiment. I'll be curious to watch it from a distance. You know, send me an email or whatever and let me know what happens with all this. I'm curious, okay?
I will. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks for calling.
You know what this reminds me of, Seth? How I've seen online how there these haunted houses, like occasionally they'll take a picture of the people in the scare scenario.
Oh, yeah.
And some people, you see this absolute terror on their faces, and other people are laughing, you know. So, you know, I think that maybe speaks to some personological differences in how we deal with stimulation.
Let's talk about this exposure therapy. You've mentioned it several times. I want to go a little deeper. If I'm understanding it, hypothetically, let's say I'm afraid of spiders, which I'm not. But let's say I was, because it's a common fear. What would exposure therapy look like for me?
Gradual exposure, repeated exposure to spider stimuli. So starting out by looking at a picture of a toy spider, you know, and staring at it for a while, and then, you know, watching spider videos online, maybe going to the pet store eventually and sitting in front of the tarantula terrarium until your nervous system says, okay, no harm has come to me because of this. Maybe this is okay. And it turns down the adrenal response. You know, that's what exposure therapy is. You know, you just get exposed to whatever the feared stimulus is until your body stops registering a threat.
So a desensitization.
Desensitization.
Is that even a word, or did I just...
It is a word.
Okay.
It is a word. And you know, I think on the topic of Halloween, you know, I think that may be one purpose of it. I mean, with all of its, you know, we're talking about existential dread, right? With all of its macabre content, the death, the gore, the skeletons, you know, it allows us to confront fears of death itself and to maybe, you know, habituate to it. And that's made easier by pairing it with celebration and even primary reinforcers like candy. You know, it's kind of the same concept behind Dia de Muertos, you know, the Day of the Dead. You get exposed to this concept of dead. There's these candy skulls at celebration. You kind of demystify it.
I've heard it said that everybody's got a dark side. I don't know. You've delved into the human mind. How would you approach that statement? We all have a dark side.
Well, as you know, as a skeptic and as somebody who conducts science, I would say, let's first operationalize dark side. What do we mean by dark side? How would you operationalize it? How would we deconstruct
it? I mean, I've heard it phrased a few different ways. One speaks to the uncivilized, the person that is barely being restrained by sort of an overriding civilized man kind of thing. You know, I mean, we fantasize about what we'd like to do to the boss who just did this to us. You know, you know, we think about the person who wronged us, and we picture ourselves in the revenge movie where we go out and exact justice, you know, but we'd never do that because we are restrained. Our civilized self has kicked in. We know that we operate as moral creatures in a society, but when we're whispering in our own minds about what we'd really like to do, you know, I talk a little bit about that dark side. And then the other part of that would be the flavor of dark side that's attracted to dark things. I mean, horror movies are really about pretty often very dark themes, whether it's the murder of someone else or whether it's supernatural forces that are enacting horrors upon people. So, I mean, I see those as kind of an A and B example of the dark side.
Yeah, there may be the first part of what you said, there may be a neurological correlate to that dark side. You know, neuroscientists have framed in the past, they've framed the human brain as being comprised of different parts, like the reptile brain, the reptile complex. You may have heard of that. You know, when you look at the human brain, there's this part of the brain that's very ancient. It's like a stem. It looks like the brain of reptiles. You know, it's the amygdala, the brainstem. Basic survival functions, fight, take flight, eat, sex, and more complex animals have more and more gray matter. And that's the thinking part of the brain, the part of the brain that weighs the consequences, the part of the brain that thinks about logic and reason and data and intel, you know, that puts the brakes on a lot of the impulses that come out of that, you know, those earlier parts of the brain. So, yeah, sure. We all have impulses that allowed our ancestors to survive, to perform basic functions, to compete with one another for resources, to seek revenge, like you said. And we've also developed a part of the brain to keep those in check.
Talking here with evolutionary psychologist, author, Dr. Hector Garcia. I heard an apologist once during a debate. He just made the declaration that if it hadn't been for his belief in Jesus Christ, he knows he would be a murderer. And I think his interlocutor actually said, well, actually, in your case, I'm kind of glad you believe in Jesus Christ because we don't want a murderer out there, you know, kind of.
That's pretty scary if that's the only thing keeping you from murdering somebody. You know, I think people tell themselves that too because they heard it somewhere, right? We need that to not be murderers. I think a lot of times people repeat that.
Maybe it sounds really impressive too. If you're trying to impress on an audience the importance of your specific dogma, then you just declare it's the only reason there isn't moral anarchy on the planet.
Which just isn't true.
I've got 612. Thank you so much for waiting on me. Hi, what's your name?
Manuela.
Manuela, thank you so much for calling. You have a comment or question for Dr. Garcia.
A kind of a story, which is funny because you talked about spiders and exposure therapy. And that is basically what I did to myself over the course of several years because I was mortally afraid of spiders growing up as a young woman. And at some point, I just said to myself, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of being afraid of something that realistically is not going to hurt me, really. So I started with pictures. I was the kind of person who couldn't look at a spider on a TV. I would cover my eyes if there was a spider. And I forced myself slowly. And after a couple of years, about 3 years ago, I was at a reptile and spider exhibition, and there was this guy. He offered me to hold it, and he was very patient with me, and he handed me the spider in a small container first, let me look at it, and he took a really long time with me, and in the end, I had a tarantula walking over my hands several times, and I did not freak out, and it was probably the most exhilarating feeling I've ever experienced, because I overcame this, and I wasn't scared.
That's a great story. And what's amazing to me is that you self-administered this. You took this upon yourself to do prolonged exposure therapy. That's impressive.
I also didn't want my children to see me be afraid of spiders and then pick that up. So I did that also partly for them so they wouldn't be afraid, which, funny enough, didn't work at all. My son is scared of spiders, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
We do find different styles of people when it comes to the spider. One person sees a spider and they immediately smash it. And then they go on Facebook and talk about how, oh my God, I just killed the biggest spider in my kitchen. And then there's the other kind of person that scoops it onto a piece of paper and escorts it outside and lets it loose to fly, be free, or walk away, or whatever, that kind of a deal. Isn't there an evolutionary reason, though, that we're afraid of spiders? Isn't that hardwired in us, Hector?
Yeah, you know, there's a biologist named Paul Byers, and I love the way he phrased this. He says, we are haunted by the ghosts of our evolutionary past, you know, of our ancestral past. Our ancestral landscapes, like we talked about, are swarming with dangers, and often they were predators, you know, or venomous spiders and snakes and things like that. So we developed these modules in our brain that are designed to help us detect and respond to those kinds of dangers. And we still have those modules in our brain, even though most of us don't live in environments where we're regularly encountering these things. So in that sense, we are haunted by these ghosts, you know, and so it's no surprise then that not only do we develop phobias of spiders and snakes at a way higher rate than things that actually kill us in the modern day, like cars, but the content of our horror movies or our Halloweens, they seem to tap into these ancient fears of predators. Like how many of the villains of our horror movies to take these animalistic forms, or Halloween with horns and teeth and, you know, things like that. They're stimulating these predator response modules of our brain.
Congratulations on overcoming your fear. Hopefully this will inspire others to perhaps do the same.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me share my story, because I'm pretty proud of it.
I'm proud of you. That's amazing. Thanks for being a part of the show. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too.
417. Hi, who's this?
My name's Che.
What'd you have for Dr. Garcia today?
Well, in sixth grade, we moved to Tulsa, and I learned how to water ski. I have a love-hate relationship with water skiing. I was terrified of being left in the dark, murky lakes in Oklahoma, where there were monsters down there that were going to, you know, come up and swallow me whole or just nibble on my toes. So, yeah, there's monsters in all the lakes in Oklahoma. Just want to throw that out there.
I concur, by the way. I live in Oklahoma. And if they do exist, you'd never see them because the lakes are all sort of the color of dirt. There's not blue water in Oklahoma. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So that's it.
Well, I appreciate you very much. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. All right. We've got some tools to work with. It's been an interesting and compelling conversation about fear and the human brain. Dr. Hector Garcia. His website is hector-garcia.com. I'll throw that link in the description box. Also, check out his books and his work. Dr. Garcia, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This was a fun one. Thanks so much to everybody for their submissions and their calls. I hope your Halloween holiday is absolutely amazing. I will see you back here next time on the Thinking Atheist podcast.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.